Welcome to the NHL Wraparound Podcast, featuring Neil Smith, President, General Manager of the 1994 Stanley Cup champion New York Rangers, and longtime ESPN NHL veteran Vic Morin. Together, they share no-nonsense opinions on news and issues around the National Hockey League. Whether you're a casual or diehard fan, each episode of NHL Wraparound will leave you more informed. Now, here's your hosts, Neil and Vic.
Welcome to NHL Wraparound. Vic and Neil joining you once again. Final week of the regular season. Lots to still be unpacked. Only one playoff series is locked up. That's Winnipeg and Colorado. And still five teams going for the last two spots in the Eastern Conference. A couple of housekeeping items. We're going to be launching a website by the start of the playoffs, www.nhlwraparound.com. And we'll also be recording a playoff preview with ESPN's John Buccigross, who works both the studio and play-by-play side for hockey on ESPN. Great show coming up today. We'll be talking with the president of hockey operations and general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, Ken Holland. And we're also going to be getting into a discussion of whether or not you really need an elite goaltender to win the Stanley Cup. But first, a word from Migray.
From Howdy Hughes. From Béliveau to Bedard, we're your source for game-worn jerseys. Go to MyGray.com, MEIGRAY.com, to start your collection today. Get real. Get it from MyGray.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. Neil, it is time for the one-timers, so teeing you up.
Well, Vic, one of the things that sort of bugs me the most when you get to this time of year is the people that are crying for the stars of the league that might not make the playoffs. And this year, of course, Pittsburgh's right on the cusp of making it, not making it. They've got three or four stars on that team, not to mention Sidney Crosby as the number one guy. Then they've still got Eugene Malkin. They've still got Chris Letang and of course Erik Karlsson. They're all star players in their own right. But you hear all these people in the media saying, well, you know, Sid deserves to be in the playoffs. It's not going to be the same without Sid in the playoffs, or it's not going to be the same without Ovechkin in the playoffs, or we want Ovechkin, you know, he needs to be in the playoffs. And my thing is, it's a team game. It's only a team game. It's not an individual game. And you're trying the best you can as one of the members of that team to make that team the best you can. And that's it. And if your efforts are not good enough to get your team into the playoffs, so be it. There's plenty of good players around the league this year that I think I'd love to see in the playoffs. I'd love to see Jack Hughes be back in the playoffs again. I'd love to see Connor Bedard as a young kid and a fabulous year he's had. I'd love to see him in the playoffs. I'd love to see Dylan Larkin finally get some time in the playoffs. He's only had five playoff games in 9 years, and those came as a rookie under the tutelage of Ken Holland, who is going to be on with us later on. So anyways, my point is, you can't cry for guys that aren't going to make the playoffs. They did the best they could to get their team in. Their team didn't get in, so be it.
One of the teams that's not going to be in the playoffs this year is the Arizona Coyotes. And by week's end, there is an expected sale of the Coyotes to the Smith Entertainment Group billionaire Ryan Smith, who also owns the Utah Jazz of the NBA. And if this sale goes through, then this will be the end of a 28-year run of the Coyotes in the desert since the club originally relocated from Winnipeg in 1996. And in fact, last Wednesday, general manager Bill Armstrong flew up to Edmonton to advise the team of what the status was of a potential sale. And we're even hearing that after Wednesday night's home finale, again against the Oilers, the team and staff members will be heading up to Salt Lake City to check out the facilities and to also check out the surrounding areas to decide where they may want to live next season. Now, it just seems that this entire existence of the Coyotes in Arizona has been tied up with just a lot of stuff with arenas. They started in America West Arena, which was really built for basketball. And then they went to jobbing.com arena, which was located in Glendale. And that never seemed to catch on the way it needed to. And then the last couple of seasons, they've been playing at Arizona State University in the Mullet Arena, which I think last year was kind of the cool thing to play in a college building. But the truth of the matter is that it only holds about 5,000 people. And it's kind of been a black mark on the league that this franchise has been somewhat of a laughingstock. And even in terms of success, they've had one big season since their days going back to Winnipeg. And that was 2011-2012, when as the Coyotes, they finished first in the Pacific, and then they lost in the conference final to the eventual cup-winning LA Kings. And the franchise record, going all the way back to 79-80 when Winnipeg joined the league, the franchise is 38 games under 500 in the playoffs. So certainly, you know, not a ringing endorsement for success. But the story doesn't end there, because the current owner, Alex Murillo, is going to participate in a land auction on the 27th of June to try to procure property to build another arena in the Phoenix area. And if he is able to win that auction, he has 5 years to build an arena. And then if that happens, he'll be promised another NHL franchise. So as much as the drama seemingly has come to an end in Arizona, it still has some shelf life potentially left to it. This one-timer segment has been brought to you by the Ninsel Wealth Partners. Our goal is to be your primary source of financial advice. Our mission is to provide quality strategies customized to your needs. We recognize that you place your trust in our ability to help you achieve your goals. To us, there's no greater honor, and without question, there's no greater responsibility.
Well, now it's a pleasure of NHL Wraparound to bring in an old friend. And when I say old friend, I mean old in the terms of length of friendship time, not in age of said friend, Ken Holland of the Edmonton Oilers. And that sounds even funny for me to say that, Kenny, after all these years of saying Detroit Red Wings, Detroit Red Wings, Detroit Red Wings. And now to say Ken Hall, I don't think I've ever said it before. But anyways, it's great to have you here, and thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, Neil, nice to be with you and Vic. Looking forward to chatting. And obviously, you and I go way back to when I first got into the scouting business in 1985. You and Jimmy Devolano were the first people to hire me and give me a chance. So that's the old, not as in age, as in old as in our long-term relationship, friendship.
I think that was a pretty good decision on Jimmy's part, was to it was one of those ones that worked out, although we didn't think it would in 85-86, Vic, because we were ending with 40 points that season. And Ken was in his first year as a scout, and he's in the car with me going all over Hell's Half Acre. And we're looking at each other going, we might get fired before we even learn how to do this.
And those were some pretty lean teams in the mid-80s also, so...
Yeah, I think the Red Wings had missed the playoffs, 3 years, made the playoffs 3 out of 15 years or something. It was tough times. Vic, just a funny story. So I played 9 years in the American Hockey League. My last 2 years were in the Adirondack Red Wings, which was Detroit's farm team. Neil was the general manager. The year was over. I got a call from Jim Devolano telling me my contract expired. They weren't going to re-sign me. And, I was looking for work. I'm 29 years of age. We've gone back. My wife and I, Cindy, have gone back to Vernon, BC. We're living in my parents' basement while we're trying to find a place to live. We've got three kids born in 81, 83, and 84. And I'm working at the liquor store. Cindy's a nurse working at the hospital. And I come home from the liquor store one day, and my mom says to me, Ken, what are you going to do if, you know, how's hockey going? I said, not very good. My agent's calling, can't find me a job. I'm 29 years old. I'm 5'8". Saves percentage about 86%. It's not, these aren't good numbers. Try to get a job. And my mom says to me, Cindy wants you to go up to the Lakeview pool. She's gone up there with the kids. Go see her. I go downstairs, get my trunks on, come upstairs. My mom meets me at the top of the stairs and she said, Ken, what are you going to do if you don't get a hockey job? And I said, well, I got grade 12 education. Cindy's going to pay for me. Cindy's going to work. I'm going to go to the college. And then from here, we're going to go to UBC. I got to get a degree. She said, Ken, you're 29 years of age. You got three kids under the age of five. You got to put food on the table. She pulls out the Vernon News ad, and there she's got an Electrolux vacuum cleaner. She's got an ad in the paper. They're looking for a salesman in Vernon. And she says she's called the number. And the job's open. She says, I've had Electrolux vacuum cleaners my entire life. And she said, you know, lots of people. You got the gift of gab. It's a great product. She said, I think you should take the job. She said, you get 40% of every sale or something. And I'm going to be your first. I'm going to buy your first vacuum. And I paused for a second. And then she said, and Ken, Grandma Eastbrecht, who was my mom's mom, lived five doors down. She said, she's going to buy your second vacuum. So I paused for a second. I said, Mom, any idea of the status of Aunt Emma's vacuum? She lived two doors down. She said, Ken, family's taking care of family. I thought, well, I've sold three of these things. I haven't even called the 800 number yet. So I said, well, Mom, let me think about it. I got in the car. I grew up the Lakeview pool. My wife obviously had gone to university. She said, Ken, you are not selling vacuum cleaners. And about by fate, two or three or four days later, I get a call from Jim DeVolano and Neil Smith, and Bill Dineen, the minor league coach in Adirondack, had strongly recommended to Neil and to Jimmy that they hire me as the Western Canada scout. And for me, the rest is history. So it's amazing the way Neil took a chance on me, Jim DeVolano took a chance on me. And as Neil said, the first year we had 40 points. We had the first overall pick. I wasn't sure how long I was going to be in the business. And then after I accepted that job, about 2 weeks later, John Paddock called me. He was the general manager, head coach of Hershey in the American League. And I'd agreed to a $30,000 contract to scout. John Paddock offered me $35,000 for a one-year deal to be the goalie in Hershey. And I said, give me 24 hours. I called John Paddock back the next day and I said, you know, John, I'm going to be looking for work this time next year. This is a great opportunity, and turned down a job to continue to play, and got into the scouting business, worked with Neil from 85 to 89. And then Neil left to become the general manager of the New York Rangers. And I became chief scout. So it's funny how life goes, and it can go in different directions.
You know what,
Neil, how are we going to top this?
Well, we're just going to keep going with it. The part about this that we've never talked about actually in all these years and decades is one of the reasons, other than Bill Dineen, told me about your hockey acumen because he spent a lot of time talking to you. But the other thing was, is that we're the same age, very similar age. And I wanted to work with somebody my own age because everybody back then, you know, I'm at that time, how old did you say we were at that year? We were probably
30. I think you were about 32, 33, and I was 30.
Yeah, no, you're one year younger than me. You're 55 and I'm born in 54. But anyway, it was all old guys on the scouts. We're all older guys. And I was by far the youngest. You remember that, Kenny? Like, we were young guys. And it was going to be fun for me to have somebody that I could work with that was my same age. And that I don't know how well we knew each other before you took the job. I think we knew each other from Adirondack pretty good, but not like you and Bill. But that was another one of the reasons why I wanted this thing to work out, because Wayne Meyer had gone back to the Portland Winterhawks, who was our Western scout, and he was older, not old, but older. And I really wanted to have somebody, you know, that I could have fun with. And as it turns out, we had a lot of fun during those few years.
Yeah, we sure did. I remember the very first road you come out west. I think it was like October the 7th or 8th, and we ended up going to Prince Albert. And it's like the beginning of October. We got hit with a massive snowstorm between Saskatoon and PA. And I think that's when you and I started to get to know each other. And then 2 months later, I came out on the 26th of December. We went to Hamilton to the World Junior. And then And then we had to go to a game in Michigan. I think we had to drive like about 8 hours to watch one game, and you and I were at a car. And that's when I started to realize I got a little bit nervous driving with you. It was plowing snow. We're going by semi trucks. He's going about 80 miles an hour. I've got my hands tied to the, I'm strapped in and felt like I was in a road rally. Neil knew how to get from point A to point B as fast as anybody.
But you know, the biggest thing is, Vic, is when you find somebody that you have a similar sense of humor with, and you can laugh all the time, it makes it, you're not working anymore. So that's the way it was for Ken and me. We laughed. We must have laughed. We never stopped laughing the whole time we worked together.
Victor, so one night I remember Neil and I are in Seattle. We're scouting. And back then, I mean, there was no cell phones. There was this hotline. You had to get NHL scores. So you'd call this hotline. And it would give you, this score, Minnesota 6, Buffalo 2. So we're on the road, and Detroit's getting thumped. So one night we're in Seattle, and Neil picks up the hotline, calls the hotline, and he listens to all the scores, and he hangs up. And I said, How'd we do? He said, you better call the hotline. He said, it said we lost 9-2 at home. So I call the hotline again. I hang up the phone. I said, you're right. I think it was Boston 9, Detroit 2. In Detroit, we were just getting thumped on a regular basis. So ended up with the first overall pick and the 22nd overall pick. And it was Joe Murphy and Adam Graves, correct?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And if you remember, when everybody was giving us crap about taking Joe Murphy instead of Jimmy Carson, I was saying, well, how can you give us crap about doing that? We got Adam Graves as well. I mean, we got, you got two of them. And of course, nobody could see in Adam Graves what we saw and so on. But for all our viewers and listeners that are interested in current day and not interested in the 80s, I'll move on, Ken, for a minute and bring up the first thing that I wanted to say to you, which is, if you go back to the trade deadline, you guys had this remarkable season this year. I mean, I don't think in all your years in Detroit, you ever experienced a season like you've experienced this year, where you started out and all bets were that you were going to miss the playoffs. And then all of a sudden you turn it right around for many different reasons, obviously. And you're back to being a Stanley Cup contender after being somebody that everybody thought wouldn't make the playoffs. So you get to the deadline. Well, I should start before that. You sign Corey Perry in January, who had come out of Chicago, and we all know that story. And I thought that was a good signing at the time. Vic can attest to that because I told him that. And then at the deadline, you go pretty lightly, and you pick up Adam Henrique and Carrick and Stetcher. Can you talk about the deadline and what your thoughts were going into the deadline?
Well, first off, to your point, yeah, we got up 2-9-1 to start the year, and we were reeling and had to make a coaching change, and then played at a real high level. And so as we got into February on the leading up to the trade deadline, our feeling was we needed to get deeper up front. Our defense had played, I think we're 8th or 9th in the league in goals against now. So after the tough start, we've done a good job in keeping, being the top quarter of the league in goals against. Stu Skinner has done a really good job after getting off to a tough start. We all got off to a tough start of really building on a great rookie year last year with 29 wins. And I think he's got mid 30 wins this year. So we felt good about our goaltending. Pickard's played very good. They've got wonderful chemistry. So we wanted to get deeper up front. We want to try to get some people to chip in offensively. Carrick shoots right. Henrique shoots left. We'd kind of gone through the whole market. Obviously, we had cap challenges. There were some people that were moved that we couldn't even get into the game because we didn't have a lot of cap money. Ultimately, Henrique said we got him quartered. So he's 5'8 divided by 4. So he's around 1.4 in Adam Henrique. We Carrick is 50 cents on the dollar, so he's 400. And so I think we added like 2.6 to add three players. So we wanted to get another defenseman. We wanted to get some depth on defense. We feel good about Philip Broberg in the minors, shoots left. We wanted to get a right shot defenseman so that we've got eight defensemen, four lefties and four righties. We wanted to get some people on the bottom six that could play left wing, could play center, kill some penalties, win some draws. And as we kind of worked our way through the whole trade deadline, you know, game, I guess, as you want to say, you know, working the phones, looking at our board, looking at our cap space, looking at our assets, ultimately worked our way towards the deals that we made to get more depth up front, more depth on defense, and get a righty and a lefty and some guys that can, like I said, penalty kill. Adam Henrique can go up and down the lineup. He can play, you know, anywhere in the top nine. And I think probably Sam Carey can play anywhere in the bottom six.
Ken, on your current roster, only Corey Perry has won a Stanley Cup. And I think you have four other players that have actually played in the finals. So when you take that plus the playoff experiences that the club has had over the last 2 years, when you put that together, how do you feel that this team is positioned now compared to the last 2 years to make a big run?
Well, you make a good point, Vic. I think, and certainly Corey Perry was important to us for a variety of reasons. I mean, first off, when I was the manager in Detroit and Corey was playing for Anaheim, we had two or three playoff series, and I saw how difficult he is, you know, not only in that series, but watching his career from afar. You know, he's a playoff type performer. You know, his impact in Montreal a couple of years ago, his contributions in Tampa Bay. So when he became free, and after we went through the process to get comfortable to try to sign him, and I know he had a number of different options, we wanted to add him. Stanley Cup, you know, he's a Stanley Cup winner. You brought him in, he's a Hart Trophy winner. He's you know, he's scored 40, 50 goals in the league before. He's been very productive in the playoffs. He lives in the blue paint. You know, come playoff time, the more people that you have that go to the net hard, you know, screen goalies, create havoc. Those are kind of playoff goals. It's harder to have those finesse, you know, rush up the ice, shoot the puck in the net. It's more greasy types of goals. And certainly having a team with Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, we also feel that we can score those, you know, I guess those finesse goals where you rush up the ice. But so Corey was bringing a lot of different dimensions, you know, size, grease, grit, go to the blue paint, leadership, Stanley Cup on his resume, a player that can certainly stand up in the locker room and can talk and will be well respected because of his resume. So, you know, he wasn't really a trade deadline acquisition per se, but he was about a month out. So, you know, you're adding Henrique, Carrick, Stetcher and Corey Perry to the last month leading up to the trade deadline to our team. So trying to get deeper up front because of the salary cap, because of the position we were in with the salary cap, when the year started, we really carried 12 forwards. We carried 12 forwards and 7 D and two goalies. We only had enough cap space to carry 21 skaters, you know, 19 or 21 players, two are goalies. So we had seven defensemen. And you need more than 12 forwards. Neil's been at it. If your hopes are to play for 2 months, you're going to need more than 12 forwards. You're going to need 14 or 15 forwards. You're probably going to need 7 or 8 D. You're going to get banged up. You got to have people that can step in and you know, plug a hole. And certainly that's why we needed to add some forwards down the stretch, and we added Perry, Carrick, and Henrique to give us more depth. And they're all kind of, you know, I call them greasy, gritty. They'll all go to the blue paint. They all play with a little edge, and those are the types of players you need. I feel that you need come in the playoffs.
I was going to go on to something else, but I'm going to double back because I want to make mention of this. Do you find that in Edmonton, you've done two or three reclamation projects in Edmonton, two for sure, with Evander Kane and now Corey Perry, where they were left their last team under not great circumstances, and then you got them to come to Edmonton, and they've played really well for you, both those guys, especially Kane. And you took a chance on Zach Hyman. I remember when you signed him, people thought you overpaid him and all this stuff. He hadn't done in Toronto what he certainly has done for you guys this season. I'm not saying he's a reclamation project, but certainly Kane and Perry. And you never had to do that in Detroit. Now, I know you had a different player base, but do you find that being in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, in some ways makes it harder to get players, but when it comes to a reclamation project, you might be able to get them there because nobody else is taking the chance on them?
I would say, Neil, in the first year that I was here, when I hired in 1920 and the team had missed the playoffs the two previous seasons, what you're talking about is older players. And certainly, I think the 2002 team that I had in Detroit, I think is one of the oldest teams to win the Stanley Cup in the last 30 years or something. Obviously brought in Brett Hull and Luke Robitaille and Dominic Hasek and lots. So, the older players want to go to a team that they feel has a chance to compete for the Stanley Cup. So when I got here in 1920 and the team had missed the playoffs the two previous years, even though we had Connor and Leon, we had some work to do to try to build the team up to make it more competitive. So I think that as we've kind of gone through, Peter Chiarelli, the old manager before me, did a great job with his staff in drafting Stu Skinner, the third round, drafting McLeod in the second round, drafting Evan Bouchard in the first round. Those three young players are real key players for us. So we've had to be patient, watch them kind of grow into NHL players, and now they've grown into really important. I mean, Stu's our number one goalie. Bouch is one of the top five scoring defensemen in the National Hockey League, and Ryan McLeod's a real established third line center for us. So the growth of those players. And then as our team got more competitive, now I think as you go to, you get into free agency, and obviously Vander Kane, it was midseason, but he was an unrestricted free agent. Corey Perry was an unrestricted free agent. Zach Hyman was an unrestricted free agent. Those players had options and could go other places. And I think ultimately, when they look and you got Connor and Leon, you got sort of that, that the engine that drives your team. And there's some other people in there, obviously Darnell Nurse and Ryan Nugent Hopkins. And then Zach Hyman has become one of those guys. And we did the deal last year at the deadline for Ekholm, and he's kind of become part of that, the players, the group of players that drives our team. So I think that ultimately was, can't speak for those guys, but I think that was probably part of their decision-making process to come here, that they felt that we were a competitive team. They looked at the core group of players and felt that they were, really good players, and ultimately decided to come here because, like I said, when you start to get, I find players come in the league, they're entry level, they're 19, 20, 21. What do they want to do? They want to make the National Hockey League. They want to make some money. They want to play. And then they want to set themselves up for another contract. Well, as you go through your career and you've sort of accomplished a number of things, you're well paid. You've got some longevity. Your guide and record book says you've done some nice things. Everybody wants to have a Stanley Cup on their resume. I think if you play in this league and you never get an opportunity to be part of a team that wins the Stanley Cup, it's a missing piece. And I think that ultimately I'd like to think that's part of the reason why these players, Evander Kane, Corey Perry, made a decision to come here, because they feel that the team is competitive. It's a legitimately competitive team. Now, I would say to you that there's 16 teams are going to make the playoffs. I think parity is better than it's ever been. Competitive balance is better than it's ever been. I think you could legitimately make the case that 10 or 12, if not all 16 teams, can go on a run, and maybe not all 16 can win the Stanley Cup. All 16 can go on a bit of a run, and win a round or two, and maybe 10 or 12 can, you can look at them and say they can win all, go all four rounds and win the Stanley Cup. So, you know, you just want to be on one of those teams that has the chance, that you think has a chance to go on a playoff run.
Schedule maker really hasn't done you guys too much of a favor as you head into the playoffs. You're in the midst of five games over the course of the last 7 days of the season. But it looks like right now, either Los Angeles or Vegas are going to be your first round opponent. And you've had success against the Kings each of the last 2 years. But last year, you lost to the eventual Stanley Cup champion, Vegas Golden Knights. Tell us the truth. Do you look at the standings? Because we know you're going to say you don't care who you play, but do you check the standings regularly?
Yeah, I have done that for 30 years. that's our life. So when Neil and I were working together, we were checking the standings to make sure we got into February that we didn't win too many games, so we picked high. And then, you know, later you check the standings to make sure you're high enough, so you got enough points that you're in the playoffs and you're trying to get home ice advantage. So you know, I check the standings every day. That's part of what I do. You're right. I don't care who we play. I think, you know, you want to go into the playoffs, number one, healthy. You know, you want to get, you'd like to start at the tournament as healthy as possible. Ideally, like to have everybody healthy. And then I think you got to expect that you're going to get some injuries as you go along. And that's, you know, goes back to where we talked about trying to accumulate some depth to our team leading up to the trade deadline. You want to go into the playoffs kind of playing, you know, on top of your game. I think that's part of the reason why in our sport, you know, the six, seven, eight seeds, you know, they upset the number one, twos and three teams because they're playing playoff hockey for 4, 5, 6 weeks leading up. And these other teams that have banked these points away, I can remember in 2000 and, you know, I'm with Scotty Bowman. We clinched the President's Trophy with 10 games to go and, or 8 or 9 games to go. And Scotty asked me my opinion. And I said, well, Scott, I'd rest, you know, take the foot off the pedal here for 2-3 games. And then the last four, let's put our foot back in the pedal. And we rested some people. And we, I think the last 10 games, we went like 2-8 or 3-7. And next thing you know, we're the President's Trophy winners. We're down 2-0, lost both at home against Vancouver, heading out to Vancouver games 3 and 4, and your season sitting on the balance, you know. And it's easy today to say, you know, we won the Stanley Cup, but, you know, as I'm sitting on that plane thinking, holy cow, we could be out here in 4 or 5 days, you know. So you want to try to keep your team, you want to go into the playoffs with your team, put their foot on the pedal, playing good, you know, but you also don't want to get any injuries. So it's a different, a delicate balance down the stretch. So want to go in playing good, want to go in healthy, don't care who we play. And then you see how it all plays out.
Ken, if you don't mind sticking around for another minute, this is great stuff. We just have a few more things for you, if you don't mind.
For sure. Yep.
In the meantime, let's hear from our friends at Doer.
Over the last few weeks, you have heard us talk about the versatility of Doer jeans. Doer makes stretch performance denim and lifestyle apparel for men and women with elevated styles that stand apart and are made to last. They're made from natural fibers for high stretch, breathability, and moisture absorption. And the antibacterial treatment means less washing. Plus, Doer is committed to sustainability. They use materials like plants and recycled plastic to create the fabric. Trust us, you will be reaching for your Doer jeans again and again. Order yours today. Check out Doer's flagship stores in LA or Denver, or shop online at shopdoer.com/NHLfan. Right now, our listeners get 20% off site-wide when you use our exclusive URL. Shop Doer.com/NHL fan. This is an amazing deal. Don't wait to get 20% off. Go now to shopdoer.com/NHL fan. Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. We are being joined by the president of hockey operations and the general manager of the Edmonton Oilers, Ken Holland. And Ken, before we went to break, we were speaking about health. And of course, top of mind, Connor McDavid got dinged up a little while ago. He's missed several games. You're in the midst of 5 games in the last 7 days. Where do you see his status heading into the playoffs, particularly that he's sitting at 99 assists, obviously one shy of a mark only attained by 3 other players in NHL history?
Yeah, I think we were in last Saturday, we were in Calgary. He got banged up a little, nothing significant. We just wanted to be 100% sure that he's healthy. So we shut him down for a period of time. No doubt in our mind, he's going to be ready to rock and roll and be healthy and be in the lineup for game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So we just wanted to make sure that obviously he's our most important player. He drives our team. We didn't want to take any risks with playing him banged up a little bit. And, you know, in terms of certainly he's got 99 assists and one more assist to go into a short, small group of 4 people. I believe that in the history of the National Hockey League, over 100 years have only attained, 3 others have attained, Bobby Orr, Wayne Gretzky, and Mario Lemieux. His number, I haven't really talked to him a lot about his individual accomplishments. He's very humble. He's very driven. It's all about team. I think it would probably mean something to him, you know, when his career's over and you reflect back. So if we can, he can get the 100 assists, I think that would be historical and put him in, again, grow the list from 3 to 4. But I know that the number one most important thing to him is being healthy and trying to take see how far we can go with this team in the playoff and ultimately try to, everybody wants to get their name on the Stanley Cup. So I know that that's what drives him and motivates him is team success.
One of the most important aspects of winning the Cup is between the pipes. And it seems like there's been somewhat of a revolving door over the last several seasons with Mike Smith and Koskinen and, a cast of several, and nothing has seemed to click. And then Stu Skinner comes in and kind of supersedes Jack Campbell, who had been brought in. And early in the season, you know, kind of wondering, was Skinner going to be just like everybody else? But as the season has gone on, there's a stability, there's an agility with him, and there's also a confidence that I believe the team has with him in goal. And it's certainly been an impressive run for him this year. And want to know your thoughts heading into the playoffs with him as your clear number one.
Well, first off, a great draft pick by Peter Chiarelli and his team. And when I got here, he was just a young goaltender. And actually, my first year at Christmas time, Keith Gretzky and Bill Scott, assistant general managers of mine that oversee Bakersfield, said, "Ken, Stu's struggling down there. We got to get him to the East Coast League. We got to get him some games." And they got him down for 2 weeks. He played some games and came back. And then from there, started to pick up. And then a couple of years ago in the pandemic, in the Pacific Division, and it was, I think, 8 or 9 teams. They had the regular season. They had some best of 3 series, and Bakersfield won the Pacific Division championship per se. But I think those experiences, their playoff, the last game 3, they played Vegas. I think they played in the big rink, T-Mobile. I think there was 10, 11, 12, 13,000 people in there. So for a young goaltender, those are really important experiences. And then he played about 15, 16, 17 games with Mike Smith. And then 2 summers ago, obviously, Mike Smith was retiring. Koskinen was going back to Europe, and I knew we had to rebuild our goaltending. And Stu Skinner was now no longer a waiver player. He was going to be one of our goalies. I wanted to get another veteran goalie with them, made the decision to sign Jack Campbell. And last year, as the year started to wear on, we started to lean more and more towards Stu. In February, this is a year ago, not this February, a year ago, I think Jack won 9 in a row. Stu's wife had a baby and got him. We spent some time, personal time, to take care of his family business. And then as we got into March, Stu, we were in a race for the playoffs with LA, with Vegas. We were in the hunt for home ice, and we really leaned hard on Stu. And I think Stu, when the year was over, Stu, I think, started 28 of our last 32. And he was a rookie. You know, he's a finalist for the Calder Trophy. How often are goaltenders in the final three voting for the Calder? So what he did was pretty special. Tied a Grant Fuhr's rookie record with the Oilers for wins at 29. And this year it came back. Obviously, I started the year with Jay Woodcroft as the coach. And one of the things that we had talked about was down the stretch, March and April, you know, taking the workload off of Stu. Now that was, we were going to go, you know, Stu and Jack. And kind of, as it turns out, we sent Jack to the minors. Pickard came up and they've found a wonderful relationship. They root for one another. They got wonderful chemistry between them and with the team. So I think that Chris Knobloch has done a really good job here down the stretch. Not overplaying Stu. Picks played great for us. And I think that he's now a second year NHL player, Stu, versus a rookie, you know, so he can reflect back on those experiences. And Stu's been a big part of us, of the year that we had. You got to have goaltending, and he's 24 years old. He's 6'4". He's a big guy. He's a workhorse in the American Hockey League. You could throw him out there night after night after night. If he has a bad game, you know, it doesn't affect him. You can throw him out the next night. He bounces back. So these are all the experiences that we've watched him kind of grow through Bakersfield. And now he's come up to the National Hockey League. And, so certainly we feel great about our goaltending going into the playoffs. Jack Campbell is actually playing very, very good in Bakersfield after the first 2 or 3 weeks that he was down there. I think his head was spinning. He's playing at over a 920 saves percentage in the American Hockey League. So with Skinner, Pickard, and Campbell, we feel good about Stu Skinner as our number one, our workhorse, our number one goalie. And we also feel good that we've got real good depth behind him. You know, if we have, obviously, if you have touchwood, if you have injuries, but certainly Stu is a number one guy. Logs a lot of minutes, eats up minutes. He's a minute muncher. He's a workhorse. He's a big guy. And he's just coming into, as a goaltender, 24, 25. He's just coming now into, goalies can play longer because it's, you know, they're not skating up and down the ice. So, you know, goalies can play till they're 34, 35, 36 and be really good in this league. And he's just 24, becoming 25. He's just really coming into his prime years as an NHL goaltender.
Ken, I want to just hit on the last thing I have for you, which I think is important to hear for the listeners, and also something that I know you and I have spoken about in the past. And that is, you know, you ran an original 16. There's nothing, I know myself, there's nothing, if you're a historian, there's nothing more exhilarating than running one of the original six teams, right? I mean, you had the Red Wings for so many years. I had the Rangers for not nearly as many as you had the Red Wings, but I was with the Red Wings with you and then over to the Rangers. And I know that feeling of pride that you get out of being, part of that long history of that team. But now you've gone to Canada where that brings its own pressures with a Canadian team and Canada not having won the Stanley Cup since 1993. Can you just talk about what it's like now to suddenly shift over and run a team in Edmonton, Alberta, after so many years with an original six team in Detroit?
Well, first off, hockey in Canada is a passion. We all take great pride that, you know, it's our game, whether it is or is, it's our game, you know, so obviously the, you know, I was in Detroit for many years. The scrutiny really changed, you know, in my opinion, probably in 2015 or 16 when social media and these, you know, these other different ways of communicating have gotten more important. You know, prior to that, it was, you know, you read the newspaper and, you know, a few little things. So certainly there's lots of passion. There's lots of scrutiny. But I think when you're in this business, you want to work somewhere where it's important to the people and it means something to them. And the game is, you know, they wake up the next morning, they have coffee, they're talking about the team. Certainly that happens here in all across Canada. So, to come to Canada, to have the opportunity to work for a Canadian team, a passionate fan base, ownership that's wants to win. We go to the cap, and obviously my pleasure to be able to watch Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl every day, and knowing that I've got the responsibility to try to, you know, build around them and support them and try to build the team to be competitive, was, I get, you know, everything I could have hoped and more. The building's full every day. You go to Safeway. They know I'm who I am at Safeway, and yeah, you know, I got to make sure I go to Safeway on a winning streak, not on a losing streak. but it's been unbelievable. And certainly I spent, I think, 35, 36 years in the Red Wing organization. And now to come to Edmonton, I've been very, 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 very fortunate to work for two great franchises and two fan bases that really care and, love their teams and support their teams.
Ken, I can't let you go without asking about our team, our old team, and where they are today and what your thoughts are on the current Red Wings. And Stevie Yzerman, I know, has done a great job under your tutelage in Detroit. And then he went to Tampa and did a good job. And now he's back with the Red Wings and doing a great job. But what do you think of today's Red Wings and where they are in their effort to try to get back to where you had them at times?
Well, first off, Neil, you know, Steve's done a great job. When I left them, you know, we'd made the playoffs 25 years in a row, and you know, you're spending futures, you know, what are few draft picks, and you're trying to win today. And ultimately, when Steve took over, and when I left in 2019, you know, they'd missed the playoffs for 3 years in a row. The first year and a half under my watch that they missed the playoffs, I was still trying to get in. And then ultimately at the trade deadline that second year, I started to realize I had to make some decisions to, for a rebuild. And those two trade deadlines, we ended up trading Thomas Tatar and Gus Nyquist and some other, we got some draft picks. And then Steve came in and for another couple of years, he had to kind of, you know, there were some older guys there and, you know, probably run off some contracts, and you know, now Steve's got it, done a great job in getting some great young players there. I'm obviously rooting for them to make the playoffs. I know that they looked like they were really in, and then they got banged up with some injuries, but they still open. You know, living there, and Neil, you live there, the fan base and how important that team is to that, not only city of Detroit but Michigan. Certainly, I root for them. And all those people, Steve Yzerman, Chris Draper, and Yuri Fisher, and you know, I had those guys as players, and then hired them in the front office. So certainly, I'm rooting for them, and I think Steve has done a fabulous job, and they've got a bright future, and they're on the upswing. I would say this, you know, in 2015 and 16, I was on the podium there when Detroit had lost out to Tampa Bay and in the first round. And, you know, there was some talk about a rebuild. And I said that, you know, when you go into these rebuilds, they take 8 to 10 years. Like, you know, because we're drafting 18-year-old kids. And other than if you get these phenoms, you know, it takes them 3, 4, 5 years to really establish themselves. You know, and then if the odd time, if you don't, you know, it's not an exact science. You're drafting 18-year-old kids. If you don't draft the right ones, it just takes a little bit longer. So, you know, I think that this is year, I think I was for 3 years, they missed, it's four again, this is year eight, and they're on the upswing. And I think they're on a great path. Great job by Steve and his people. And, you know, I'm rooting for them from afar to get in, because it would be great for that fan base.
Ken, I want to thank you so much for joining Neil and me for this podcast today. Certainly your insights on the Oilers and also the stories with Neil and your history with the Detroit Red Wings. Just a great education for our listeners. So thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks, Vic. Neil, nice to be with you guys. Keep going. You guys are doing a great job.
Time now for a quick shout out to our sponsor. NHL Wraparound is brought to you by MyGray, your source for game-worn jerseys. Head to MyGray.com to get your collection started today. Get real, get it from MyGray. NHL Wraparound subscribers can take 10% off any hockey jersey when they order at mygray.com and use the coupon code WRAP10. Don't forget that coupon code, WRAP10.
Welcome back to NHL Wraparound. Vic and Neil with you. And one of the most important aspects to win a Stanley Cup is goaltending. But Neil, in recent years, I think we've seen the paradigm shift a little bit. And the question that we're going to start this discussion with is, do you really need an elite goaltender to win a Stanley Cup after we've seen Darcy Kemper and Adin Hill win the last two seasons for Colorado and Vegas, respectively?
And it's a really good question. And has the shift happened in the Colorado season and not, shifted from having Vasilevsky win two straight Stanley Cups with Tampa Bay, albeit in the bubble era? Certainly, he was a throwback to the Patrick Waugh, Marty Brodeur era of fantastic superstar goaltender wins you a Stanley Cup. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the 24 champs and who they have tending goal for them to make a decision. Okay, now it's been 3 years in a row of just big guys in net, or is it going to go back to a superstar goalie winning it?
And really, Vasilevsky and Marc-Andre Fleury are the only two Hall of Famers, or true Hall of Famers, that will have won the Stanley Cup. And you can go all the way back to 1999 with Belfour and Brodeur and and Hasek, going all the way up to the 2003 season. That was a run of Hall of Fame goaltenders. But we really don't see that now. So it almost subscribes to the fact that, you have excellent goaltenders and excellent goaltending. And we certainly saw it from Matt Murray back-to-back years in Pittsburgh. We saw it with Corey Crawford winning multiple Stanley Cups with the Chicago Blackhawks. So this really becomes a fascinating question heading into the tournament starting Saturday.
It does. And if you went by the old standard, you might put all your money on Winnipeg Jets and Connor Hellebuyck, because to me, he's been the best goalie in the league this year. He is a star goalie. I think he's probably Winnipeg's best player. But if you look down at the other contenders, you're really not seeing, possible Hall of Famers in their nets.
Correct. Well, I wanted to just shift on to something else, and that is goalie tandems. And it certainly looks that if you took all of the potential playoff contenders right now, that the stronger tandems are in the East. You can argue Igor Shesterkin and Jonathan Quick in New York, Linus Ullmark and Jeremy Swayman in Boston, and Ilya Sorokin and Semyon Varlamov with the Island. And you really don't see that in the Western Conference. But truth be told, there really hasn't been a rotation to win the Stanley Cup since the Boston Bruins in 1972, when Jerry Cheever started eight games and Eddie Johnston started seven. So how important is this piece?
Well, I think the parity is so overwhelming in the league now compared to what it used to be. When you think about back in the days of Eddie Johnston and Jerry Cheevers and the Boston Bruins, and they were an overwhelming favorite in the NHL. We don't get overwhelming favorites. It's easy to look right here at this year. And you tell me for sure, well, who's going to win the cup? Well, we don't know. There's no 80s Oilers, 80s Islanders, 70s Canadians that, everybody's saying, well, they're going to win it. And I would imagine that if you are a team that's completely competitive with the other teams, and you're going to want to go to that guy night after night after night that your team has the most confidence in, and you won't take the chance of putting the other guy in the net. So that's where I come out on it. I think these teams, again, this year are probably going to run the hot hand as long as they can.
anything in terms of the evolution of goaltending, you know, whether the size of the goaltenders, equipment improving, technique, have you seen anything that has kind of shifted the way we look at goaltending for the playoffs?
I don't know if it's the way we look at goaltending for the playoffs or the way we just look at goaltending, because I think the shift came when we started to get space age equipment and the puck didn't hurt anymore. If you talk to the guys in the old days, the puck always hurt. Even Mike Richter, the puck hurt. Glenn Healy, who we had on the Rangers, the puck still hurt. At times where it hits you. Today, you see the goalies get as big as they can possibly get. They're down on their knees. They try to be the Michelin man and just have the puck hit them to make the save. Just get as big as they can. I think that's where goaltending changed. So now you've got big, big guys. Look at this guy that just came into Philadelphia. 6 foot eight. Tough.
Yeah.
I mean, just huge. And that's because he covers more of the net than the small guys do.
Yeah, and it certainly seems like now the most vulnerable spot on a goalie is players shooting at the head from in the corner. So, you know, it's certainly just remarkable to watch how the game changes over the years.
It sure is.
This is the human side of the story brought to you by UBS Financial Services. And certainly, Neil, just had a great time with our guest, Kenny Holland.
We sure did. And I just want to add a little bit to the some of the things that he said at the beginning of the interview about his life before he became the famous Hall of Fame general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. Ken was a kid that was born and raised in Vernon, British Columbia. I know that his dad was German heritage because Ken told me that. We had so many different long drives in the car. After growing up in Vernon and honing his skills as a goaltender, he's a little guy, you know. Ken's can't be more than 5'8". And he played in Medicine Hat, Alberta for the Medicine Hat Tigers. And that's where he met his wife, Cindy. They got married. And as he said to you, they had three little kids when he was just finishing up his time with the Adirondack Red Wings, which was in 1985. I remember us signing Ken away from the Hartford Whalers, the Binghamton Whalers, and signing him for the Adirondack Red Wings for Bill Dineen coach team there. And Ken came in and he was always a really good guy, funny guy. And when it came time to find a Western scout, because ours had decided to go back to junior hockey with the Portland Winterhawks, that being Wayne Meyer, I asked Jimmy D to let me hire Ken Holland because I wanted to have a young guy that I could get along with and that I could have fun with and that we could see things together. And I knew he had a good hockey mind because Bill Dineen, the coach in Adirondack, had told me he's got a very good hockey IQ. So the rest is history. He gave you some good parts of his life background, but just a great story when you think about a guy who has a 12th grade education, almost selling vacuum cleaners, ends up in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And who knows, maybe on his way to another Stanley Cup this year.
And we're certainly going to see certainly one of the most compelling stories about to happen with the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I'm going to talk about the college championship. And this past Saturday, the University of Denver won their second title in 3 years, beating Boston College 2-0. And that gave Denver their record-setting 10th national championship. The coach, David Carl. And that's the same David Carl that led the U.S. junior team to the gold medal this past winter. He's the brother of Matt Carl, 2006 Hobie Baker Award winner, and also played 11 seasons in the NHL. But the story of David Carl goes a lot deeper. In 2008, he was at the NHL Combine, and he was diagnosed with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is a thickening of the heart muscle, and it makes it difficult for the heart to pump blood. But fortunately, he was diagnosed because within the same year, prospects for both the Calgary Flames and the New York Rangers both died because they had not been diagnosed. In the 2008 draft, Tampa Bay symbolically selected him with their last pick, and that was also the year that Steven Stamkos was drafted by the Lightning. Carl tried to come back prior to his sophomore year because his condition had improved, but it wound up that he collapsed on the ice and wound up having two surgeries. So at that time, the head coach, George Gwadzecki, who was heading up Denver, asked Carl to be an assistant, which he did. Upon graduation, he joined the Green Bay Gamblers of the USHL. And who was the head coach there? None other than Detroit Red Wings current head coach, Derek Lalonde. So in 2014, he went back to Denver, became the assistant under Jim Montgomery, the current head coach of the Boston Bruins. And then when Montgomery left for Dallas in 2018, Carl took over, becoming the youngest head coach in D1 at age 28. And now we have seen some really remarkable success with his wins on the college level and also at the world junior level. I don't know what Carl's plans are, whether he wants to stay in college or move on to the NHL. And you certainly know, Neil, that the NHL head coaching, it's almost like a recycling bin. But boy, if there is a team that is really looking for some fresh new blood and a great resume, David Carl could be their guy.
What a great story, Vic. And what a, you know, that's an education for me. I didn't know that story that you just told. And I'm sure that a lot of viewers and listeners will really appreciate that story about David Carl. And congratulations to him on their NCAA championship. Well, we want to give a shout out to and a thank you to our sponsors, which are MyGray, UBS, Doer, and Ninsel Financial Partners. Thanks to our listeners. Please send questions or comments or anything you want to nhlwraparound@gmail.com. Don't forget our website is soon to be up and running, and it's nhlwraparound.com. Pretty easy. Special playoff preview coming Friday with none other than ESPN studio and play-by-play man John Butchagross joining us. That should be a lot of fun. John's always a lot of fun to talk to. As you know, Vic, you've got a long history with him. I've got some history with him, and we're going to have a great show. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.
Thanks for joining us on the NHL Wraparound Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date on all the NHL action.